Выборы во Франции. Макрон и Ле Пен во втором туре.
Кандидаты от основных партий Франсуа Фийон и Бенуа Амон.
Теперь Франции предстоит сделать выбор между Макроном и Марин.
Франсуа Фийон считался главным.
Макрон и Ле Пен – представители противоположных идеологий.
Уже сказал, что It was the catastrophe that wasn't. Three of the top four candidates in the first round of France's presidential election last weekend were, by varying degrees, sympathetic to Vladimir Putin's Kremlin regime. And the front-runner for most of the race, National Front leader Marine Le Pen, had pledged to take France out of NATO and the European Union. The Kremlin deployed all of its tricks, hacking, disinformation, fake news, and money. But when all the votes were counted, it was pro-European and pro-Atlanticist centrist Emmanuel Macron who came out on top and enters the May 7th runoff as the heavy favorite. Is Europe's populist anti-establishment wave receding, and is Russia's political interference in Europe backfiring and sparking a backlash? Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFURL. Joining me on the Skype line from Paris is Cécile Vassier, a professor of Russian and post-Soviet studies at René Dou University and author of the book The Kremlin's Networks in France. Welcome to the podcast, Cécile. I'm not even going to try to attempt to pronounce the title of your book in French. I just hope I pronounced your name properly.
That's fine, more or less.
Glad for joining us. And also joining us from Paris is Marcel van der Herpen, director of the Cicero Foundation and author of the book Putin's Propaganda Machine, Soft Power in Russian Foreign Policy. Welcome to the podcast, Marcel. Glad you could join us.
Yes, hello, Brian.
Hello. So let's start with the particular, and we can move our way up to the general in the second part of the program. Cécile, how did the Russian factor play out in the French election? We all know about the famous loan to Le Pen. We all know that the Kremlin was very favorably disposed toward the Republican candidate, François Fillon. And we know that the leftist candidate, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, also expressed some pro-Moscow sentiments. And the Kremlin was also comfortable with him. And we know the Kremlin used all of its resources to smear, hack, and otherwise harm Emmanuel Macron. But Macron nevertheless came out on top. He'll face Le Pen in the second round, and he is heavily favored to be France's next president. Was Russia a factor in this election, and it just backfired? Or was Russia not a factor? How did you see this?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't be too optimistic at the moment, unfortunately. It is a fact that Macron came first, and it is a fact that it doesn't rejoice the Kremlin. Yes, the Kremlin did try to have an impact on the French election. This is a fact. You named all the factors, the possible hackings, and there were hackings on the side of Macron's party. The influences, the working with the social media and everything. Macron came first. We still have to wait what will happen on the second tour. And we shouldn't be rejoicing too much for the moment, saying that he will be the next French president. It's not that sure. We are seeing all kind of political conflicts and political disagreements in France around the fact that people, especially from the left, the one who voted for Mélenchon, should vote now for Macron to block the National Front. And this comes as a surprise in France, where usually you always have this idea that all Republicans should unite against the National Front. And this is not happening the way it should be. So the Russian factor and French unsolved political problems are playing their parts right now.
Uh-huh. No, I agree with you. You shouldn't count the second round as a done deal yet. When we learned that bitter lesson in America as well, you shouldn't count on the polls.
Exactly.
But French polls are, I must say, have a reputation for being extremely deadly accurate. And the polls in the first round were, in fact, extremely deadly. Yes. Accurate. Yeah. The polls right now, I checked them before I came in the studio. We have Macron at 60% going into the second round, with 90% of those certain of their choice. That's certainly a good sign, no, for Macron?
It is a good sign, but I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just trying not to rejoice too early and not to tell everyone you can go on weekend and everything will be fine. because we saw what happened in America and we don't want it to happen in France. Yes, Macron is still, according to the polls, winning the second tour, but he's lost 2% in 1 or 2 days. There are really conflicts on whether to participate to the elections or not, to the second tour. Some people do not know yet whether they will just go to vote or not. And plus the fact, you know, it's sort of scary also in France that it's a long weekend. Mm-hmm. So usually people just leave and go to the countryside. Mm-hmm. So it will also depend on how many people will go to vote or not. So we should be fairly optimistic, but not too much. Anything can happen. You know, you've quoted it yourself. You know, when you have one of the Russian journalists, Solovyov, who said 2 weeks is a long time and mm-hmm. anything could happen, we're all sort of scared that something could happen that could change the disposition as it is. So do not rejoice. We should all do our part so that Marine Le Pen doesn't become president the way Trump became president.
Now, you raised what Solovyov, the Russian TV anchor, said on television this week. He seemed to be rooting and hoping for a terrorist attack in France before the May 7th second round, saying 2 weeks is a long time in politics. This morning, I just read a report that the Macron campaign has banned RT and Sputnik from his campaign events. Are we already seeing signs of Russian activity going into the second round? Because there was a lot of speculation in Moscow that maybe they would kind of back off and try to reestablish relations with Macron, who was not extremely anti-Russian in the early part of his campaign. He became that way progressively as the Russian attack machine started coming after him. What do we expect to see out of the Russians in the second round?
Listen, for the moment, we were all expecting Russia to sort of stick quiet and not say anything. They, when you read, for example, popular papers in Russia, like the Komsomolskaya Pravda and this kind of stuff, they're all extremely anti-Macron, saying things, very private things, saying things about the fact that he's supposed to be an homosexual, that his marriage is a false marriage, that he, all kind of things that have nothing to do in a political campaign. So really, when he banned RT and Sputnik, and he's the first political in France to ban RT and Sputnik from his events, I think he understood on his own example what does Russian propaganda mean. So in one sense, this is a good thing. You're very right to remind that he wasn't anti-Russian at all, that he wasn't anti-Putin at all. He didn't say anything. He just didn't say that he wanted to approve everything Putin said. He didn't say that. He's the one of those who didn't say that. And that was a difference with Marine Le Pen and Fillon and Mélenchon. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't anti-Putin. And he just got a feeling, got a taste of what the Russian propaganda may be when it started against someone. So he banned these two media from his event. And we'll see what will go on. I wouldn't say that Solovyov was hoping for some kind of a attack in France to happen. But they do feel that they can still reverse the trend. Mm-hmm. And that's very sensible. You have some journalists in Russia who write, well, we can adjust to the situation. For example, someone in Kommersant wrote about that we can adjust to it. And there are all these very popular things saying, well, basically, that France shouldn't vote for Macron. It should vote for Marine Le Pen. Plus, all kind of groups that exist on social medias in France, they are rooting for Marine Le Pen. They are saying the worst things about Macron. So it's really, and it's the first time in France that you have a political campaign at that level of compromise, of saying things, private things about someone, and where you have so strongly a foreign country that is trying to save one politician and to impose one politician on the nation.
Let's bring Marcel into the discussion here. Marcel, how did you see the Russia factor playing out in the first round, and how do you expect it to play out in the second round?
Well, in the first round, I think there were some fake news attempts. First, that Macron would be gay, and second, that Macron would sleep with the daughter of his wife. Well, these two things already were contradictory. But the problem is, I think that accusing Macron of being gay is maybe a good thing to end a career, a political career in Russia, but it's not a problem in France.
Yeah.
Because even the vice president of the Front National, Philippot, is an open gay person. So I think there is a cultural problem for them to spread fake news in France. I think the other point is that the wave of populism could be receding, and I think there are different causes. The first is that the Trump factor. Trump has been elected, and it was a wake-up call for many people of the populist wave, mm-hmm. and it has led to an anti-populist mobilization. We have seen this already in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. and also in Austria. In Austria, too. And then we have the American elections have made clear for everybody that Russia is really meddling in elections. And this is a new fact, well, that they know. Russia is meddling already for years and years, but it was not known. So I think all these things together, people are waking up to the problems. And that means that I think that in the second round, anyway, that there will be a majority for Macron. But as Cécile said, you never know, and we should not be complacent, because I think that this is the biggest danger we can have. Then we get a repeat of 2002, when the socialists thought they won and they lost. Mm-hmm. Well, for the second, for the parliamentary elections, well, I think that will be different. It will be more difficult for the Kremlin to interfere, and so I think there are less problems over there than in this election.
I mean, one thing I wanted to zero in on what happened in the first round is that, I mean, it's always been my assumption that while Le Pen got most of the attention, the candidate Moscow really wanted was François Fillon. That was always my understanding. That's how I always interpreted it.
That's true, yeah.
And I was wondering, how much did the Russia factor play in Fillon's collapse? Now, we know that it was really the corruption allegations that brought him down. But after he won the Republican primary, it was widely assumed that he was going to be the next president of France, that he would go to the second round, and he would, using the Republican front, would basically shut out Le Pen and win. Moscow was very comfortable with that. It was looking like a win-win situation for Moscow in the second round. Now, Fillon, of course, the corruption allegations about him employing family members to do work they alleged apparently didn't do played a very big factor in his collapse in the polls. But I was wondering, how much did the Russia factor, given everything you just said, Marcel, play in to the collapse of François Fillon's campaign?
I don't think that it played a big role. So I think it was really the corruption factor that played a major role in his defeat. Because also, let's say, Marine Le Pen is well known that she is a friend of Putin, and it doesn't play a negative role for her. And we have the same with Mélenchon. So I think that's the problem. The problem is corruption. If you look to France always had corruption in politics. It was more accepted than in the northern countries of Europe and in the Scandinavian countries in Holland and Germany. But I think in the last years, you see that people are becoming more strict about corruption and don't accept corruption anymore. So I think this factor played a big role, and he underestimated it because he didn't want to change to give the candidacy to another candidate. And he wanted to go on till the bitter end. And that's why he lost.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Cécile? Did the Russia factor play any role here? Because I know Macron was highlighting it in debates and on the campaign trail early on in the campaign, and I was wondering how much that was sticking, or if it really was just the corruption allegations that brought down Fillon.
Against Fillon, it's mainly the corruption allegation. It's really what the French people couldn't take, the fact that he used public money for his family. Also, you know, the fact that, for example, when Fillon said that he was making 23,000 euro a month, and he couldn't spare any money. And that was just the reaction in everyone, not the right, not the left.
Yeah.
If he can't spare any money on 23,000 a month, how could he spare some money for France? So it was just a question of competence. I don't think that in his case, the Russia factor played a big part, because you know, you couldn't demonstrate that he had taken money from Russia, for example. There were some allegations and there was some desire to investigate a lot more into his company. For example, he has a consulting company, and we would all like to know who paid some consulting services to Fillon. He said that there was no Russian money, but Trump said it as well. So we would all like to know who were his clients and who paid him. Mm-hmm. But there was absolutely nothing proven in that case. When you were saying that, for example, he had good relations with Putin because they had been prime ministers at the same time, it was considered to be more or less a good thing. He can talk with him. They can be on a friendly basis. So it was not playing against him. Even the worst thing he said, he approved of Mélenchon when Mélenchon said on public television that the frontiers in Europe, and especially in Central and Eastern Europe, should be revised because the frontiers that exist since the war could not remain that way.
Uh-huh.
You heard about that, right?
Yes, and he's spoken out again about he wanted to lift sanctions as well, is my understanding.
Well, he said that he wanted to have a good relationship with Russia and more or less to suppress the sanctions. The fact is that he's got in his party some people who are the biggest lobbyists for Putin. Mm. That's for sure. But I'm not convinced that the French population in general had a very good consciousness of that and has a very good consciousness of the different point of view that still exists in the Republican Party, French Republican Party, about this Russian question. So that was not the main thing. It played for Marine Le Pen because then it could be proven that she had taken money.
Mm-hmm.
So it fitted very well into some kind of schemes that we know that existed, for example, with the Soviet Union and the French Communist Party. Mm-hmm. We could say that basically they have some kind of the same relation. But I'm not sure that it played for Fillon very much.
Let's stick with this a little bit. As you mentioned that the lobbyists inside of the Republican Party, and I watched in preparation for this podcast, I watched a recent interview you gave to France 24 about this subject when you were talking about your book. I also recall in a recent report by the Atlantic Council on Russian political interference in Europe, the section on France basically outlined how the Kremlin has basically seeded money throughout the entire political system. Again, not just Le Pen, but they have their agents of influence in almost across the political spectrum. And this I bring this up because May 7th isn't the only election coming up in France. We have parliamentary elections in June.
Yeah.
And if Macron wins, which is widely expected, but we shouldn't take it for granted, he's going to have a tough time governing unless he has a parliament he can work with. Yeah. How do you see this playing out? Marcel alluded to it a bit, but how do you see this playing out in the parliamentary elections? If, in fact, you do kind of have suspicions of Russian influence across the spectrum, do you see Moscow being very active in that election? Cecile?
Just one thing, we do not have the proof for the moment, I'm just saying for the moment, that Russia is paying politicians in France. We have the proof from the Front National, that's proven. We do have the proofs of some kind of contacts. For example, One guy from Fillon's party is, like I said, the biggest lobbyist for Kremlin's interest in France. And he is the one who organizes trips to Crimea. Mm-hmm. He organized two trips to Crimea with politicians. And he went through Moscow, of course. He's under sanctions from the Ukrainian side. So, of course, there are suspicions. So why does he lead this kind of politics? Why does he defend so much Russian positions? But we do not have the proof for the moment. We do not have the proof of the kind of relationship that exists between Mélenchon and Russia. We do have the proof of some personal contacts. But for the moment, we can't go any further. You know, what has to be said, that 1 year ago, almost nobody talked in France and in Western Europe, except in Germany, about the influence that Russia was developing in Western Europe. It was maybe the secret services were busy with it, but it was not something you talked about. It's just been for the past year, mm-hmm. everybody starting talking about it. So we're just sort of getting into this subject. Everybody's been talking about it in Germany, in France, in the UK, in the United States. So we're sort of having, with the work that has been done in Central Europe, in Czechy, in Poland and everything, we sort of have a general idea now, but we don't have the details yet. So it's sort of difficult to say. But to go back to your question, very certainly, if Macron is elected, which is wish, he will have difficulty to, let's say, have his reforms, but that will be in a democratic way. So he won't be able maybe to do everything he wants. He will have to negotiate. I will have a very precise look on what Mélenchon's party is trying to do. If they're really trying to act for the sake of the country, or if they're trying to block everything. Mm-hmm. And that will also a very good sign. If they're trying to block everything like they're trying to do right now, where they're trying to block everything, when they're trying to say that the results of the first tour were not fair, were not legal and everything. So that will be the things to look at. What are they trying to do to block the country and not act as a positive opposition? Mm-hmm.
Now, Marcel, you said you didn't expect too much Russian interference, if I understood you correctly, in the parliamentary elections. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that? Because it would seem to me it would be an opportunity that Moscow wouldn't be able to resist. And it would be an opportunity to do it in a very stealthily way, because in the presidential elections, it was very clear who Moscow wanted. But if you have stealth candidates in every party, but there's a potential mm-hmm. hidden Moscow lobby in the parliament, mm-hmm. wouldn't that be too much of an opportunity to resist?
Well, I think that they will go on with influencing the elections, but I think this the presidential election, of course, it's the highest point in yeah. French politics in 5 years. So here, all their energy is now in this election for the moment. For the rest, I think for the election in June, they will support the parties that are pro Putin. And if you look now, for instance, the RT France, it's in the air, and RT France today, for instance, they had the news that the leader, the former leader of the employers organization, would become his prime minister. So they are now picturing him as a banker, as the man of the globalization and of the anti worker. So I think that will go on. And well, I think what Moscow has done in the past is they don't put all their money in one place. They support different parties that they think they can work with. It will be Mélenchon, it will be Le Pen, it will be the Les Républicains, and I think so they will support different groups in different parties. So that will go on, and I think that especially RT, Sputnik will play a big role in that. But it will not be as important as what is going on today.
Right. No, I agree with you. And on the RT report, that doesn't surprise me one bit. If you're watching Russian state television. I watched Dmitry Kiselyov's show, and they were, in addition to all the sexual smears against Macron, the other line of attack, the other narrative they were pushing was that he is the tool of international bankers and the Americans.
That's it.
And the globalized. So this is the other line of attack.
Well,
and
I
would expect that to continue. Before we move into the second section and talk more broadly about Europe, I wanted to touch on something specific to France here, and that's that looking at whether French attitudes towards Russia are changing right now. I mean, France historically has had very friendly relations with Russia, and the French people have very warm feelings toward the Russian people. And Cecile, as you pointed out in your RT interview, the how you feel about Putin's Kremlin and how you feel about the Russian people are two entirely different things. And I think you and I can both agree on that we're great admirers of the Russian people, but we have no time for Putin's Kremlin. But what I'm wondering is, because sometimes these things get conflated in people's minds, in voters' minds. And I'm wondering if French attitudes toward Russia in this regard are changing as a result of all the things we've been seeing over the past couple of years in the political interference in Europe. We saw this change in Germany. We saw this change very, very dramatically in Germany. And I've always said one of the things about the Ukraine crisis that surprised me that Putin got wrong was that he got Germany so wrong. He thought basically the business relationship with Germany was so important that Russia could do whatever it wanted and Germany wasn't going to object.
Yeah.
They didn't really calculate that the first territorial annexation in Europe since the Second World War was going to bother the Germans for historical reasons that require little or no elaboration.
Yeah.
So we saw this shift in Germany. Are we seeing this shift in France? Cecile, why don't you tackle that first? Yeah,
I think so. It's not so dramatic as in Germany because we don't have the same historical context, as you said. But I do see it with my eyes in the sense that the French really like Russia and they like Russian people. They like the Russian culture. They don't know anything about it, basically, but they like it. I would say two things. First of all, they understand that Russia is taking a part in what's happening in France and in the French election, and they don't like it. They may say, oh, but America is doing the same, but still they don't like it. So this feeling that what are they mixing in, why are they mixing in our political life? It's appearing. Second, there is one idea that is coming through. It's the idea that the Russian people are living in worse and worse conditions. So, and this idea is really getting to the people because, you know, they're facts. You can give facts, you can give statistics and explain that the people in Russia are really living in bad time at the same time when the corruption is growing. And, you know, in France, for example, and that's a different perception than they have in Germany, we see extremely rich Russian or Ukrainian people coming and buying, for example, houses in the south of France and having absolutely no limits in the money they spend and everything. And when afterwards you say very simple stuff, you know, simple stuff like a teacher in the university gets about 200 euro. The elder people, they get about 100 euro a month after they worked all their life. The French people understand very easily that the Russian people is one reality and the people at the top are another. So yes, the way Russia is understood is moving. I was very impressed by the fact that, you know, we have all these trolls attacks for the past two, 3 years. When every time that you had an article criticizing Putin, you had all these trolls coming, pro-Russian, pro-Kremlin trolls coming and sort of attacking the journalists who had written this paper and everything. And now you have real fights. So you have like real people you have some people who are for Putin and you have some people and more who are criticizing Putin. And you know, one thing that had a very, very big importance in France, it's what happened in Syria. What's happened in Syria, and especially when we saw that there were children getting gassed, and that basically it was Assad who did it, and the paper that's just gotten out on the fact that it is Assad who gassed his own people, his own children in Syria, it impressed French very much. And we all understand that he stays in power just because Putin wants him to stay in power. So it really destroyed Putin's image for a lot of French people.
That's interesting. That's what I was suspected was the case. Marcel, what do you see?
I think it's especially the kleptocratic character of the Russian regime that people don't accept. But in France, I think so. What the French are attracted by Russian culture, by music, the literature, etc. And that's a thing the Russian government plays. So it's say they try to make their the soft power offensive. What is interesting, I think, is especially that Russia not only works through RT and through Sputnik, but they have also once a month they have a small paper. It's in the Figaro, Russie d'aujourd'hui, Russia Today, in which every month there is some news about Russia, and very positive news normally. We have had also an attempt in 2009 to take over the François and to make the François a pro-Front National paper, a mass paper like the Sun in England and in Britain, and Bild in Germany. Well, this didn't work, so in 2011 it was stopped. But this kind, we see that everywhere there is attempts to manipulate, to maneuver, and to have an influence on the French public opinion. And I think that will continue in the years to come.
Although French public opinion seems to be becoming more and more immune to this, is what I
well, at the same time, I must say I'm very, let's say, disappointed by the vote of the younger voters. Half of the younger voters are voting for populist parties, for the right wing, for National, and for Mélenchon. They are very much in favor of these parties, and these are the youngest voter group. And I think this is a very bad development.
Okay, well, on that note, we will shift gears. In a few moments, we will continue our discussion and broaden the aperture to look at whether a backlash against Russian political interference is evident throughout Europe. I'd like to remind you you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. Joining me on the Skype line from Paris is Cécile Vassier, a professor of Russian and post-Soviet studies at René Dou University and author of the book The Kremlin's Networks in France. And also joining us from Paris is Marcel van der Herpen, director of the Cicero Foundation and author of the book Putin's Propaganda Machine, Soft Power, and Russian Foreign Policy. I'd also like to remind you, you could subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You could read the Power Vertical blog and watch the Daily Vertical at rfurl.org. And you could follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical.
Москва с уважением относится к выбору французского Москве народа.
Москве невыгоден приход на пост президента Макрона.
И Ле Пен, и Фийон, и Меланшон.
Без России на этом земном шаре без перспектив.
Сегодня надо разговаривать...
Suddenly, it looks like Russia is on a losing streak in Europe. Suddenly, it looks like the populist wave that Moscow is cheering on may be receding. In Austria's presidential elections in December, Green candidate Alexander Van der Bellen defeated Moscow's favorite, Norbert Hofer, of the far-right Freedom Party. And in elections in the Netherlands in March, Prime Minister Mark Rutte held off a challenge from Geert Wilders' far-right Party of Freedom. And Germany's election later this year is shaping up as a battle between two moderates who are also Russia skeptics, Chancellor Angela Merkel and SDP leader Martin Schulz. What do you think, Marcel? Has Europe weathered the storm, or is this, are we getting ahead of ourselves?
No,
we got three elections now. Now, granted that Russia wasn't very active in the election in the Netherlands, because Geert Wilders' party is pro-LGBT rights, so that kind of, he's a nationalist and a Eurosceptic who's also LGBT rights, which probably caused a bit of cognitive dissonance in the Kremlin, but they weren't active. But nevertheless, this wave seems to be receding. Go ahead.
Yes, maybe, well, we should not be too early. I think that at the same time that the populist parties are receding, we see that the middle-of-the-road parties are going to the right and take over, let's say, program points of the populist parties. We have seen this in the Netherlands with the VVD, the party, Liberal Party of Rutte, who has had a campaign, a very right-wing campaign. We have seen this in France with Fillon, who has also made a very right-wing campaign. So we see that the middle-of-the-road parties are moving to the right, taking over subjects and items from the populist parties. So, but anyway, it is okay when these real populist parties are receding. I think there are at least the Trump factor has played a big role in Europe and led to a mobilization against these populist parties. We have also to see that in France is interesting that Macron is like an anti-system figure. So he is not of the Socialist Party, he is not of the Les Républicains. It's a new center that is building up. He is new, and he can say I am more anti-system than Le Pen, and that's also an argument he is using today against her, that he is the real new man in France. So I think there are very interesting things are happening, but it might be too early to say, well, the populist wave is over. It depends also, I think, what's happening in the United States. When this goes worse and worse and worse, it will be for Europe a clear message that that's not the way to go for us, so that we have to look for other parties and other ways to develop our policies.
I mean, you raise a very interesting point about Macron, and this is something that I've kind of been thinking about and taken note of, is that he is not anti-system, but the outsider, but yet he's a centrist, moderate, Atlanticist, pro-European candidate. So it's kind of like the radical moderate, if you will. And maybe this is the wave, because I think voters don't necessarily, whether we're talking about Europe or the United States, don't want, I don't think, the fringes. I think they want something different. There's a feeling that the system isn't working for them. There's a feeling there's a large constituency that feels left behind by globalization. There's a large segment of across the West that feels disenfranchised right now.
Yes.
And when they're offered... go ahead.
I think the old party system is crumbling in Europe. For instance, we have seen this in France with the Socialist Party. We have seen the same in the Netherlands with the Socialist Party in the Netherlands, going back from 39 seats in Parliament till 9. It was a disaster. They have never had this. And, parties can come back slowly, but I think there's a real problem. And I think one of the problems was the primaries. Because with the primaries, they give the initiative back to the people, but they were in France also. You saw that people from other parties are voting in your primary and are influencing who will be the candidate, who will be the candidate for them, the best for them to have as an opponent. So I think that this whole primary system in Europe has to be abandoned by the parties, and that they have to take back initiative.
Now, this is something we've seen before in the West. Let's face it. I mean, one of the strengths of Western civilization is that it corrects itself. It goes through these periods of crises and catharsis. And I mean, I'm old enough to remember the 70s. I remember going through this in the 1970s. I'm not old enough to remember the 30s, but we went through it in a much more catastrophic way in the 30s. But Western civilization goes through these periods of self-doubt, of adjustment. And this is nothing new in one sense. What is new here, though, is that you have an outside power who clearly sees the West going through this crisis right now. The Iraq War, the 2008 financial crisis have eroded in the subsequent euro crisis, migrant crisis in Europe is eroding confidence in our leaders.
Yeah, Brexit.
And Moscow is moving in to exploit that. And that's what makes this moment a little bit different. So what do you see? Do you see the crisis receding now? Do you see a backlash against the Russian exploitation?
That,
Hold on,
Marcel. Let me bring Cecile into the conversation here.
I wouldn't say that it's any different from what happened in the 70s or even in the 30s, in the sense that, yes, there is the same kind of internal crisis in Western Europe. Yes, there are a lot of people who are feeling that they're losing from the evolution. And they know, and it's a fact, they know that they live not as well as their parents lived, and their children will live even worse than they lived. So it's a reality. It's something that we have to fight. So that's why, you know, we'll have to talk about what we call getting out of the crisis. But I don't think it's any different from what happened in the 70s, when there was like the end of the 30 years after the war, when everything was sort of blooming and increasing and everything. And I don't think it's any better than in the 30s, except that now we are very conscious of this Russian influence. We are very conscious of that fight. But in the 70s and the 30s, you have the fight also between the United States and the Soviet Union. And it's just that we didn't expect Russia to go back to this kind of fights, mm-hmm. this kind of ideological facts. We were expecting Russia to develop as a democracy and to take care of its own economy. And basically, it doesn't care about its own economy. It doesn't care about its own people. And they're trying to play at the opposite, the 30s games. And, you know, it's the Czech secret services that said that they were watching, and I really paid attention to that. They were watching the development of some kind of a new Comintern. And they were the first to use this word of Comintern. So, and it's really the processes that are going on at the moment. We shouldn't be thinking that it's any worse than it was. And we shouldn't be thinking that we won't win this time as well. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to say to the Russian government. But there is one thing that is sure. Russia knows very well how to play on our weak sides. We do have real problems in Western Europe. We do have an economic crisis that we're getting out of. And we do have these people working in factories in that are, for example, closing down and opening in Northern Africa or in Eastern Europe. We do have to face these problems. And if we don't face it, then we're going to have Marine Le Pen again with or without Russian mm-hmm. money. We are going to have this communist or proto-communist party with or without Russian money. So I really hope that Macron will be elected, but that we will face these problems mm-hmm. for those people and try to solve them, not forgetting that Russia might be willing to use everything false and everything, every kind of witnesses that we have, but without thinking that it's creating all the problems.
No, that's a good way to put it, Cecile, because I do believe there's these two things aren't mutually exclusive. There is a genuine crisis in the West. It exists. And Russia is attempting to exploit this crisis.
Yes.
And these two things are not mutually exclusive. They are both happening at the same time.
Yes.
We have to deal with them both. It's interesting you brought up the issue of the ideological fight and the Comintern, because I wrote a piece back in 2012 when there was a policy paper released from a Kremlin think tank that basically telegraphed everything we're seeing right now, basically mm-hmm. turn Putin into the leader of the kind of the world's reactionary forces. Mm-hmm. And at the time, for me, it was a curiosity. It was like, oh, a new conservative Comintern or a Putin turn or whatever you want to call it. But now it's a bit more of a reality than a curiosity. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more than a curiosity. Mm-hmm. Marcel, you had something to say before, but when I cut you off, you want to jump in?
No, just to say, well, Russia wants to take the role of the Holy Alliance in the 19th century.
Yes.
So the policeman, but the conservative, reactionary policeman of Europe and eventually of the world. So it's that's the ambition. I don't think that it will happen because Russia internally has too many problems. We are not talking about that. And, Putin will maybe, he will be re-elected.
Certainly. He'll be coronated,
but,
is another way to put it.
Next year. But anyway, the Putin regime is also coming to an end. And there will be, I think, a lot of troubles inside Russia in time of troubles again. So there are also things that are going to happen.
No, the way
open.
The way I've put it is that that Putin wants to party like it's 1815. This is one of my favorite because it's basically he does want to go back to that
1815.
But, yeah, I mean the whole he does want to go back to this idea of the Holy Alliance, but you know in the Holy Alliance he had the monarchies of France, Britain, Prussia, and Austria with him.
Yes.
Now he's got what Viktor Orban and Marine Le Pen, and so it's really not quite the same thing.
Not quite,
but. But you have to wonder how this is this ideological struggle mobilizing people in Europe, because before the Eurosceptics had all the initiative, let's face it. I mean, the pro-European people were complacent, basically, because it was the status quo. Right.
Yeah.
And you had a very mobilized Eurosceptic part. And now you have, again, an outside power, the Russian Federation, exploiting Euroscepticism, exploiting anxiety about the migrants, exploiting culture, what we call in America cultural issues. But what we're really talking about are things like LGBT rights and feminism and so on. And it kind of trying to appeal to the more right wing parts of populations. How is this ideological battle shaping out in Europe now? Is as the tide turned back to the mainstream, to the pro-European, pro-Atlanticist, pro-tolerance, whatever you want to call it, side of this, or does the other side still have the advantage?
I think it has been a wake-up call for the complacent parties in the West and for the liberal democratic parties to there is an enemy to fight, and as we had in the 1950s, 1960s, and is an ideological opponent. And, the thing is that it has been conceived by Russia as an ideological struggle from the beginning of Putin's regime. Already in 1999, he wrote in Security, already that it was important for Russia to have an ideological initiative. If you see the role also of the Russian Orthodox Church,
yes,
and the role of displaying international organizations to roll back human rights regimes and so on, and making human rights dependent on religious rights and traditional rights, etc., etc. We see this a complete ideological offensive, and I think that the West is only now waking up to the problems and to the dangers.
No, it's funny though. If you strip this all away, all of the ideological baggage away from it, and I think James Scherr at Chatham House put this really, really well. He says we're not in a Cold War, but we're essentially in a struggle between two normative systems right now.
Mm-hmm.
The normative system to the West is based on all these things we hold near and dear: the rights of the individual, the accountability of government, the sanctity of contracts, the subordination of the authorities to the law. And to the East, we have something that's based on something entirely different: cronyism, corruption, the subordination of law to power, and so on. That's at the base level. Above this, we have all this ideological baggage that's attached to it in this ideological fight. But really, I mean, Russia is kind of dressing up this kleptocracy in this clothing of traditional values. And I'm wondering how much people are beginning to see through it, because at the end of the day, anybody in the West, I think, except for people on the extremes, are going to want to live in a society that respects the rights of the individuals, where the authorities are accountable and so on, to one which is basically based on cronyism, kleptocracy, and corruption.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really... beyond that, I do believe, maybe I'm over-optimistic, but I do believe that the majority of people in Western Europe and the United States, and Central and Eastern Europe for that matter as well, are not Eurosceptics, are not anti-migrant and xenophobic, are not homophobic, and Putin is playing to the Kremlin is playing to these things that seem to be ascendant, but I think that was a bit of an illusion. No.
Mm-hmm. I think they are seeing the world too much through the Kremlin's spectacles, and we have seen this with the attack on Macron that he was gay. It didn't work in France.
Well, the idea to think that
Russia.
The idea to think that that would work in France is tone deaf. I mean, you have to be blind and tone deaf to think that is going to work in France. Just yes, like you have to be blind and tone deaf to not understand that Germany is going to be freaked out by a territorial annexation in Europe. I mean, it's just
So this
is the thing. They seem to be getting the West wrong again.
Yes.
And while they may
make values. Yeah.
So, Cecile, any thoughts before we wrap it up for the weekend?
Yeah. Yes, I would like to add one thing. You know, you're very right when you say that most people in Western Europe and in the United States would like to live and want to live in a country where you have as little of corruption as possible and as much rights and low power as possible. But I would add one thing, that many people in Russia would like to have as less corruption as possible and as much law as possible. And all the ideological talk, and you're right, it's all cover up. It's all like a way to cover up what's really happening in Russia. But all these talks about Russia being special and the people don't caring about the corruption and everything, this is absolutely wrong and this is absolutely crap. You know, in the sense that I meet many young Russian people and not so young Russian people. And they're just fed up with these corruptions. And the reasons why, especially young people, got out in the streets on March 26 in Russia, although they knew that they would have big problems. And we'll have to look very closely to what will be happening tomorrow in Russia, because there are supposed to be manifestation and people know that they will have problems. They know that they will get arrested. And if they get out to the street, it will be because they just can't stand anymore, that they're living in conditions that are getting more and more difficult, with less and less money and less hope in the future. And they see the kleptocracy at the head that is getting richer and richer. So we should feel, I think we should really fight for some values, and the main values being that individuals have rights. And that, yes, the law is not what Nikita Mikhalkov said, something that never existed in Russia and never could exist in Russia because it's not in Russian tradition. The law is something that defends and protects everyone in France and in Russia. So basically, we do have the right values. And it's just that Putin and his people around him are trying to persuade the West and Russians that they are the one who are doing right. But we should really fight for these values.
No, that's an excellent way to close out the program, Cecile, because I've often said that this populist wave that Russia has been inciting and exploiting in the West, it's something that could come back and bite him.
Yes.
Because there's a potential for this kind of wave to hit Russia and hit it hard.
Yes.
And the difference between Russia and the West is if you are of this inclination in the West, you can go to the ballot box and vote freely for a Marine Le Pen, for example, if you, or Geert Wilders, or if you so choose, or for Brexit or what have you. In Russia, you really, let's face it, at the end of the day, don't have that option. They're not going to let Navalny on the ballot in next year. And the only place that Russians can go to vent that is on the streets. And this is why I think in a lot of ways the Kremlin is playing with fire right here, and that this populist wave, when it hits Russia, is going to hit it a lot harder than it hit the West. I think the West is flexible and adaptable and resilient enough to react to this and actually come back stronger if we react to it the right way. In Russia, there's not there. It's going to hit it hard. Marcel, very last word to you before we close it out.
Yeah, I think the first color revolution in Russia was in 1917.
Exactly, it was red.
And that's why they have a real problem to commemorating today this revolution, because Putin doesn't like color revolutions. But I think there will be color revolutions in the future, because Russians are normal people like we are, and they want the same rights and the same influence on the government. So I think there will be change in Russia, and I hope it will come.
Okay, well, on that note, we shall wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. I would like to remind you, you have been listening to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFRL. Joining me on the Skype line from Paris has been Cécile Vassier, a professor of Russian and post-Soviet studies at René Dou University and author of the book The Kremlin's Networks in France. And also joining us from Paris has been Marcel Van Herpen, director of the Cicero Foundation and author of the book Putin's Propaganda Machine, Soft Power in Russian Foreign Policy. Thank you both for an enlightening and lively discussion.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank our brilliant, patient, and ridiculously overworked producer, Tanya Koncheva, and my indispensable and totally awesome colleague, Pavel Butorin, managing editor of RFRL's Russian language television program, Current Time, which you can watch at www.currenttime.tv. I'd also like to remind you, you could subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You could read the Power Vertical blog and watch the Daily Vertical at rfrl.org. And you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week, and now, as always, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noize MC.